CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchel with Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. In these last days, a significant meeting called the Negev Summit, turning on the Abraham Accords, to help us understand why this summit, what it has achieved so far, and the significance of the Abraham Accords going forward in the Middle East. We welcome Laizer Berman, the diplomatic correspondent for the Times of Israel, just returned from the conflict zone in Ukraine to help us with the case about the Abraham Accords blunting the conflict zone of the Middle East, if so. Laizer, welcome back, and thank you very much. What is the Negev Summit? What does it serve in the development of the Abraham Accords? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thanks for having me. The Negev Summit was a surprise, first of all. Once Secretary Blinken confirmed to the Israelis that he was coming, which was only last Wednesday, Foreign Minister Lapid started calling the other foreign ministers from the Arab states that Israel has relations with, and it came together extremely quickly. By Sunday, they were all in Stay Boker in the Negev. Now, this was presented as a united front against Iran, showing that America and its regional allies are standing together against Iran, but I think that is not really what is behind this. I think much of what is behind it is a lot of discomfort from Israel and from the Abraham Accords countries and from Egypt, who also attended, about the future of American policies in the region. And I think this was really an attempt to come together and to tell the Americans that there are things that we are uncomfortable with. And as the IRGC and its proxies are firing at the UAE, are firing at the Saudis, and let's not forget, are firing in Erbil at the U.S. consulate building, we certainly don't want to see the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guards Corps, be delisted as a terror organization. So that is the, I think, some of the background why these countries were so eager to be there. There's also the bilateral. So Israel had bilateral meetings, and everyone had bilateral meetings with the other countries there. And each one of those has its own significance. But Israel and, let's say, Bahrain were able to formalize their relationship and kind of set the terms of their relationship for the next 9 years. So the fact that this summit happened is certainly an important sign in the movement forward of the Abraham Accords, that these countries are willing to be so public, to come into Israel, to come to the burial place of Israel's first Prime Minister, Ben-Gurion. And I think what's especially significant is the fact that the countries agreed that this would be a regular forum, that it would move between the countries, always in the desert, but it would become either a semi-annual or an annual event moving forward. So I think that is especially significant, and it's a good sign for the future of these relationships.
Malcolm?
I think your horizon points are important. Is the fact that Bahrain signed a 10-year agreement, the ambassador to the United States from Bahrain made note of that and said usually agreements are much shorter term, especially what they've signed. So is this a commitment to a long-term horizon for all of the parties? The fact that Egypt came in at the end and represented by Foreign Minister Shoukry, who is at best a very complicated figure, who has been an advocate on the Palestinian issue, sometimes very harshly, and did not issue a condemnation. Do you see that the Egypt will continue to play a key role in the future talks?
Yeah, so certainly Egypt, is probably the most complex role, as you pointed out, of anyone there. It was obvious, as you pointed out, that Shoukry was not smiling in the pictures. He did not offer the most forthcoming condemnation of the terror attacks in Hadera. But Egypt understands that its role in the region is unique. They, on the one hand, are very careful and care a lot about the Palestinian issue, whether it's in the West Bank or whether it's in the Gaza Strip, which they border. But on the other hand, they understand that the U.S. plays a unique role in the region, and Israel is also a partner which has increasing economic clout and economic importance for Egypt. Let's not forget that the double whammy, if we want to call it, of COVID and the Ukraine crisis has hit Egypt especially hard, a country that gets 80% of its wheat from Ukraine and Russia. So the fact that Israeli tourists will be coming over on Passover, the fact that Israeli natural gas can go through Egyptian portals, I think is especially important to the country. So Egypt, whether its foreign minister wants to make faces or not, it understands that its relationship with Israel is one that is a permanent feature of the landscape. It's important for its ties with America. And Israel can even make the case for Egypt at times with the Biden administration when Egypt gets nervous about pressure over human rights. So the fact that Egypt was there was significant. It was not easy for the Egyptians to be there. But let's also forget the Jordanians were not there and did not show up. Instead, were in the West Bank in Ramallah. But I don't think that's too much of an issue to worry about, because Gantz was there. President Herzog was there as well. So it's not like the Jordanians are trying to make their ties with Israel not seen. They're willing to be public, and there were Israeli flags all over the place during Herzog's visit. So I think in all, these countries understand that these relationships with Israel are a permanent feature, or at least are going to be a feature of the Middle East for as far as we can see forward for the coming years.
Laser, does the Negev summit in some fashion address the JCPOA under consideration, the possibility of whatever it looks like empowering Iran? Is this an answer, these countries talking together routinely?
I think Blinken wanted this to be an answer, and I think his intention was that these regional countries would be somewhat relieved or somewhat comforted by the fact that the U.S. Secretary of State was there and was playing an active role. And let's not forget that not every country there is especially concerned about the Iranian issue. I would say the Egyptians, that's not their first concern. On the other hand, you have countries like Bahrain who, you know, have been in a decades-long conflict with Iran, you know, since the 80s. And countries like Morocco, which see Iran's hand all over the place, whether it's in Algeria or other terrorist groups in the region. But I don't think that these countries came out of there with the feeling that they could push U.S. policy. I think what the U.S. tried to offer was, well, we're going to have a set of six working groups. The U.S. is going to be engaged in the region. We're not running away from the region. But I hope these countries understand that the U.S. is going to do what it's going to do on the Iranian issue for its own domestic reasons or its own political reasons, in terms of putting that issue back in the box, getting a hand on some of the fuel prices and focusing where it wants to focus, which, let's be honest, is not running after conflicts in the Middle East. And hopefully these countries understand that, and they didn't come into this summit with expectations that were too high, but hopefully they were just trying to make their case and to push the U.S., move the dial where they could. So I don't think anyone came out entirely pleased, but that's a function of what expectations they were coming into the summit with.
Do you think Secretary Blinken in any way healed some of the rifts or at least built some bridges between the United States and the countries, all of whom feel very alienated or concerned about U.S. policy, especially about the Iran negotiations? And did you get a sense that any kind of a common policy is being developed between the parties to respond to the potential of a deal?
The most concrete response to the forthcoming deal, if indeed it does come out, is this regional security architecture that they spoke about. This is not going to be NATO. It's not going to be a formal alliance with an Article 5 responsibility to intervene in other countries' wars. But it seems to be emerging as a somewhat robust agreement, not even an agreement, but a vision of how these countries can work together. In their statements, they talked about cooperation on threats at sea, threats in the air, which is very, very relevant, especially as we see increased capabilities and brazenness from Iran and its proxies in terms of missiles and drones, and also on piracy, especially in the Red Sea region. So it does address some of those issues, but I don't think that would be enough to really allay the concerns of these countries. But again, there is a formalized structure that is emerging. There is going to be regular meetings, whether it's with the ministers or directors general. And I think that has to be encouraging in many ways, though, again, this is not going to really get at the root of why some of these countries are worried. There are also issues that strike at the bilateral relationship with the United States. The U.S. has been very adamant about its desires for Gulf countries to start producing more oil, which they did not agree to do. The U.S.-Morocco relationship is somewhat complex right now in terms of some of the legislation on Capitol Hill about the about Western Sahara, about the U.S.-Morocco defense cooperation. So every single one of these countries has its own bilateral relationship with the U.S., which came up, and we're dealing with the countries as a regional front, trying to portray a message to the United States about how the region feels about Iran. So it was quite a complex thing. It was only 2 days. And of course, in the middle, you had the terror attack, which also took some of the attention out of the proceedings.
Laser Berman, diplomatic correspondent, Times of Israel, Malcolm Holmlein on the road. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.